Hello and welcome to this special one-to-one edition of Women's Soccer Zone. We like to do things a little bit differently now and again. And on the line on this episode, I have the sports scientist and performance coach for the US Women's National Team, Dawn Scott. And I will stress, English individual Dawn Scott. She may have won a World Cup for the United States, but we're still claiming her as one of our own. Dawn, how are you doing?
Hi, Kieran. Thank you. Yeah, I'm good. Thank you. Thanks for the introduction.
Hey, no problem. No problem. We haven't won a World Cup since 1966 in any form of football. If someone wins a World Cup and they're English, we're going to claim it. So we will take it when we can get it. But look, the purpose of kind of wanting to do this one-to-one, you and I actually spoke a little while ago, and unfortunately the interview didn't work out for reasons that we won't go into. But on this occasion, we're talking to you about a week and a half before the US Women's National Team are due to head to Scandinavia for two fixtures against Sweden and Norway. The purpose I wanted to speak to you is to get a little bit of insight. You're known for the work that you do with the US Women's National Team, and everyone, I think, accepts that one of, if not the fittest teams in world football. I guess what I want to try and find out from you over the course of this interview is the sort of things that go into working with those players. I mean, first off, I guess it would be good to get a bit of insight into, between now and those games against Norway and Sweden, what's the sort of things that you will be doing in terms of preparing the players?
I mean, obviously right now the players are in, majority are in with their NWSL teams, and then we've obviously got Alex Morgan with Leon, Carly and Chris Dunn in England. So for me, some of it is just keeping in touch with the players. They still fill in our online wellness app every day. So I just follow up with where the players are at there. If they've dipped massively, I'll just reach out to the player and just check in with them. You know, are you doing okay? Is it, you know, they all dip after a game. So, you know, that is normal. If they dip at other times, it's just checking in. Is anything going on? You know, trainer-wise, do they feel they've overtrained? Are they not doing all of the recovery strategies? So that's kind of one facet of keeping in touch with them. And then the other thing is just getting round to all of the teams and, you know, just checking in with the teams and seeing the players in their training environment. We monitor all of the players as well with their GPS and heart rate. So, again, every week I just get reports generated so I can see the weekly train loads of those players. So literally the day we arrive in Sweden, I'll have had a 7-day kind of last load for every single player that comes into camp. And then Jill and I and the coaches would usually meet as well with our trainer and just say, you know, do we need to modify anything for any player based on what they've done the last 7 days? Or, you know, is there any kind of injury issues from the games that weekend? They'll obviously, the NWSL players will all play that Saturday, Sunday. So yeah, it's just kind of checking in with the players just to see where they're at training wise, wellness wise.
How easy or difficult is that? You've mentioned that you've moved around, you've been to a few of the NWSL clubs. We'll talk about that in a minute. You and I bumped into each other in Manchester at a game that Carly Lloyd was involved in. Awkward moment for me when I looked you in the face, didn't recognise you and completely ignored you, but we won't go into that one. But how difficult is that? Because obviously the players are being trained and coached in and being given, I guess, plans from their clubs and their fitness coaches at their NWSL or their respective clubs. And then you're coming along from a US Women's National Team perspective and maybe approaching it a little bit differently. How easy or difficult is it?
I mean, it's an ongoing process. I'm not going to lie. Obviously, my time in England was mainly spent with Man City and Arsenal, and it just happened that I could coincide with Leon coming into Manchester, so I had an interest in meeting with Alex, her fitness coach and an interpreter, because her fitness coach didn't speak French and I didn't speak, her fitness coach didn't speak English and I didn't speak French, so, you know, some of it is just meeting them face to face, so you kind of have a name, so then when you're emailing or speaking to somebody, you've actually met them. And I think that's really important to establish those relationships. And then other than that, you know, the key thing for me is to make sure our players are not sick or injured. And then also to make sure, you know, physically they're progressing, they're preparing and kind of doing well in games. So, yeah, I have my own thoughts and philosophies in terms of their training. I definitely try and kind of work together with the clubs to make sure from a strength and lifting perspective that, they do some of the common lifts that we've kind of done over the last 6-7 years of my time with the national team, so there's some consistency. But then I also totally respect that every single club have got their own expert in terms of, you know, the strength programs for players. So again, it's just making sure that some of the foundations of the program are common, but then obviously appreciating that some will have their own ideas or philosophies on developing other parts. So yeah, it's not easy, but it's ongoing, you know, communication, and it's a bit give and take because we can't dictate, because, you know, clubs have their own full-time staff, and equally they want to prepare for, you know, midweek games, weekend games and so on. But ultimately we all want the same goal, because we all want any player performing to the physical peak and obviously not being injured or sick. So, you know, I think that's always how I've kind of broached some of those conversations, that we are working towards a similar kind of focus or outcome.
How does it work in terms of, you've got your players that you're going to be working with regularly, you're going to have your Carly Lloyds, your Alex Morgans, your Megan Rapinos, who are more often than not going to be named in that US squad, but there are players who have featured who have then come out in this squad. Obviously you have a new potential cap in Abby Smith coming out of the Boston Breakers. You've seen players in other squads. Sarah Killian has been in and out. You're not getting a lot of time to get to know these players before they're then maybe not featuring in another camp and another player comes in. How's it differ in terms of the players that you're used to working with and the players that are maybe coming in that are fresh and that are new?
Again, that's kind of been a long-term project with the NWSL. So after the World Cup in 2015, you know, we had the luxury in the lead-up to the World Cup in 2015 that the players literally spent 3 weeks with their NWSL clubs, and then other than that, they were with us, with the women's national team. So we could pretty much put in our programmes, kind of monitor them daily and everything. And I feel like that was obviously a big part of our preparation going into Canada. After the World Cup, it was, you know, acknowledged and appreciated that the players need to be in their NWSL markets more so that we continue to grow the league. So then it was, okay, well, how can we make the training environments kind of more professional for the players and get an insight in terms of what they're doing day to day? So then worked with US Soccer and NWSL to then introduce GPS, heart rate and wellness monitoring into all 10 of the teams. So now they all use the same system that we used with the women's senior team, but then all of our women's youth national teams use. So with that, you know, it's then been, we've brought the sports scientists in from the clubs to educate them on the systems and processes initially, but then again, obviously give them some of their own kind of free rein as well, because they're all experts as well in their own rights. But that also differs across the clubs in terms of the person they have doing this kind of sports science role. But it is just kind of ongoing communication. Brought somebody in, Andy Gard, full-time last year, and his full-time role is kind of helping with the day-to-day management of the NWSL kind of project. So, you know, I'll say to him, okay, I need data on this player, and he'll work with that club to get it. So, you know, we don't just monitor the 20 players or whoever who were last in camp. Jill has a target list of, you know, 30, 35 players who are being monitored every week anyway. So, you know, Abby Smith isn't just been kind of on my radar now, probably since last season when she got hurt, was when, you know, Graham wanted me to kind of monitor. So again, there's kind of a lot goes on behind the scenes in terms of players being monitored. And as soon as Jill brings in a new player to the squad who I might not have met, I'll straight away call or email them and just say, kind of introduce myself and just say some of the expectations in terms of the wellness and, you know, just start kind of communication there. But the other piece, kind of visiting the clubs as well, has been massive, because Abby Smith, yeah, I'd never met her, but I kind of did the fitness testing at Boston early this year and then also kind of went out to visit the club. So again, you already start that kind of communication process. And a lot of the times I'll turn up to a club and I know a player's name and that she's there, but I've never met her, and suddenly she'll either come up to introduce me or I'll say, you know, are you whoever, Abby Smith or Danny Weatherholt at Orlando? And, you know, you just start that kind of communication process.
How much educating do you have to do of players? Obviously, in your job and in your industry, developments in technology, developments in the types of nutrition and everything that comes with being a professional athlete is always evolving. It's always moving on. How much communication do you have to have with players, and how much educating is there of players to ensure that they are keeping up with those latest developments and those latest changes?
Sure. I mean, again, with the kind of women's national team, I guess it's we're kind of starting almost a new cycle, you know, from my time when I came in 2010 up until, you know, 2015, 2016. You had the Christy Rampones, Abby Wambach, Heather O'Reilly, Lauren Holiday, Shannon Box, you know, you had all of those players in the squad. And, you know, over the last couple of years, each of them has kind of retired. And now you've got a much younger group, you know, Morgan Bryan, Lindsay Horan, Mallory Pugh, those players. So again, I'd say probably the education piece, kind of there was a bigger input in 2010, and then it tapered off as the players kind of knew the nutrition or the hydration. Because yes, it does move on, but say nutrition hasn't changed massively over the last 5 or 10 years. We all know protein's important for recovering muscles. We all know post-game you want carbohydrate because you're going to have used 78% of your stores during a game. We all know hydration's important. So yes and no in terms of the importance. I'd say kind of some of the add-ons are how beneficial is, say, beetroot juice for intermittent sport players, you know, how important is cherry juice for inflammation and joints and so on. So I don't think the basis of nutrition has changed, but some of those add-ons have. And some of that is then just introducing it to the players and saying, you know, this could be beneficial, do you want to try it? And if they don't, that's fine. But equally, they see one player doing it and suddenly, you know, five others want to do it because they see her doing it and think, you know, it's benefiting her performance. So some of it is group education. Some of it is individual education. Some of it is they see somebody else doing it and then they start asking about it. So it's ongoing. We're trying to introduce kind of more of an educational program, almost a curriculum, like lower down the chain from our U14 to U15s. We've got sports scientist Ellie Mabry, who came in last year again, kind of working with the youth teams, and we kind of need more staff, more manpower to do it, but we've certainly already got some ideas in terms of, you know, a curriculum and key educational sessions that we need to introduce kind of with the players from 14 to 15, so that as they then move up to the next age group, we almost add on the next level of nutrition or conditioning or whatever. But, you know, Ellie also does a good job with the youth teams where they get, you know, gap plans in between the camps that they do with the youth teams, and we try and make that again consistent with, although kind of watered down a little bit, but consistent in terms of the type of sessions and so on that we do with the senior team. So, you know, there's kind of consistency as a Mallory Pugh comes through, you know, 17s, 20s to seniors, that she's aware of some of the processes already because she's experienced them.
I tell you what, Dawn, you ain't getting me drinking beetroot juice, I tell you that, unless you mix it in with a load of other stuff. Absolutely no chance.
It's definitely an acquired taste.
Yeah, I can imagine. You mentioned, rewinding a little bit, you mentioned when you came into the role in 2010, obviously you came out of the English FA, you'd worked with the England women's national team. Now, when you worked with England, you will have worked with some big players, the likes of Kelly Smith and Casey Stoney, but when you moved to the US and you've got Olympic champions, established internationals, the likes of Abby Wambach, Christy Pearce, Heather O'Reilly, Carly Lloyd, you know, these individuals who have won a lot of accolades, they are probably very set in their ways. Go rewind and think about and talk about what it was like going into that environment and what it was like initially trying to get your views and your experience over to those players.
Yeah, I mean, I can still picture my first camp, which was a training camp in LA in the January. And Pierre had asked me to do just an introductory kind of talk in terms of sports science and potentially what I could introduce and kind of bring to the programme. And I remember being nervous as hell because, I'd kind of watched some of those players grow up, you know, as just being a pure soccer fan, with England, obviously, in the 2007 World Cup. We obviously lost against the US, so we'd come up against them in games, both in the World Cup and in the Algarve Cup as well. So, you know, I'm not going to lie, I was definitely nervous. But, you know, to be fair, Christy Pearce from the outset, like, bought into everything that I was introducing. And to have her on side, who was, and Abby, and, you know, obviously some of those other bigger names, to have those players on side and doing kind of the strategies that I was introducing was immense for them players being leaders to the rest of the group to get them on board to do things. So I cut out all of the treats from the menus and made it, you know, very much kind of the athlete's diet. And, you know, there was a bit of a revolt at the next camp because the players were like, you know, we need some of those things. And, you know, I guess one thing for me that was a massive learning lesson was with a US team, they have so many days together on the road. Whereas with England, it was kind of viewed either you'd have your European qualifiers or your World Cup qualifiers, so you'd have fixtures home and away, but then the rest of the time the players would either be trained on their own or in small groups or with their clubs, whereas the US team, again, at times when there was no league, would be together for, I don't know, like 60-70% of the year. So it was important to build in kind of, you know, some of those treats in the diet and the nutrition. So, but again, you know, getting like Christy Pearce to jump in an ice bath after training and suddenly, you know, other players followed and, you know, they seen their leaders do it. And because, like I say, they bought in from the outset, it kind of made my job easier. And I always, you know, say to some of the players, say to the players, they, you know, when they buy into that and they push themselves to limits and, you know, Heather O'Reilly smashes the beep test, they make me look good because they're such professionals at what they do. They take on board the information. I mean, I don't run for the players. I don't do the recovery. I just give them tools to help them make, you know, make themselves better, physically better prepared. And for me, because they're the ones who implement them, and then the younger's seen them do it, I just feel like it kind of spreads and migrates, and they are just really good professionals.
How do you kind of approach someone like Heather O'Reilly, who I think I've heard people say in the past that arguably the most naturally fit player on the team, to someone like Carly Lloyd, who herself is very open about having to put that extra work in to make sure that her body responds? I guess my question is, how do you kind of devise programs for someone like Heather compared to someone like Carly, who are almost at different ends of the spectrum?
I think it's a case of, you look at each player as an individual on their own. For me, you look at every area of what impacts their performance from the training, from the recovery, you know, from the technical work, because, you could argue, you know, Carly Lloyd free kicks and some of her technical work is more proficient than Heather O'Reilly. So, you know, I think it was a case Carly would admit she probably had to spend more time on the physical piece, whereas Heyo could maybe spend less time on the physical and a little bit more on the technical in terms of the quality of her crosses. But for me, any athlete can still improve, you know, kind of as a rough outline in the 6-7 years that I was involved with Heyo with the national team. I think she went up 18 levels on the beep test. So, you know, when I came in, she was at a very good level of fitness, but we still made improvements. And, you know, it was a case of, again, when I came in, the players would train and some of it was the American mentality of kind of running or suicide shuttles or stadium stairs, like just like intense running sessions until you can't run anymore. And again, we changed it so that initially they started working off heart rate. So they were working at a percentage related to their own heart rate maximum. Or we based it off, you know, later days, some of the GPS data. Okay, you know, in a game, you're going to do this amount of high intensity running. So in your fitness session, let's make sure you hit that amount of high intensity running. So you're always over prepared for what you're going to cover in a game. So even with Heyo's training, it was, you know, just changing that slightly so that she could do some higher intensity intervals to just kind of nudge on her fitness. Whereas Carly, yeah, it was kind of a bigger, a longer term project. She obviously has her own coach that she's worked with for a long, long time. So again, it was conversations with him and with her as well to make sure, again, I'm not going to dictate to him, but you know, it was at times conversations, I really think this kind of conditioning would work. So again, it was, you know, a bit of integration between the two of us to make sure some of the outcomes we wanted for the national team were being hit, as well as, you know, some of the things that he thought would work. Again, with a lift and, you know, Carly, there's this rumour that Carly Lloyd doesn't like to lift, and that's not true. She, you know, we just adapt and do things that work for her. And some of that was, you know, kind of more like less traditional methods from purely lift and weights, but using some of the more modern methods like the battle ropes, the TRX, you know, bungee ropes, ladders, hurdles. So again, you just adapt to every single player. And, you know, because if I give, say, Carly the same workout as Hayo, it's not going to work. And equally, if I give Hayo the same workout as Carly, then that's not going to work. So again, it's just looking at individual players in their own right.
Sounds exhausting listening to it. TRX and ropes and weights, and I'm like, I just want to sit down and you know, not do any of that. But I read a quote from Christy Pierce a little while ago, and I think the quote went, Dawn Scott is like the secret of everything. Now, we know that Christy Pierce is still playing for the highest level in Sky Blue in New Jersey. When you have someone like that in your corner, and I think when we spoke last time, and you might want to reiterate it, I think Christy was one of those people who was very much in your corner from the off, wasn't she? How beneficial and how important was that to have one of the more experienced heads, or arguably the most experienced head, in your corner and backing your methods from day one?
I mean, probably, like, apart from Peter at the time, and then the coaches since then, probably arguably, you know, the most important piece, because in some ways the kind of players kind of managed their own rules and recovery and so on. And, you know, that was Pia's management style. She didn't want to dictate and things like that. So then you needed the leaders of the team on side. And that was, you know, at the time, Christy Pierce and Abby were the captains. So, you know, getting their buy-in was immense to that. I mean, I can never have or say how much respect I have for Christy Pierce. You know, what she's achieved in her career is just immense, like second to none. You know, I'm so pleased that in 2015 we won the World Cup, you know, for the group as a whole, but for her as well to then get two of those gold medals was superb for her. Early this season when I tested at Sky Blue, Christy was there, and it was like, well, you know, Christy Pierce doesn't need to fitness test. We don't need to see how fit you are. It's not really going to change much of what you do with her. Whereas obviously, you know, your younger players there, they do need to be tested. You know, where they're at, Mandy Freeman coming in, Maya Hayes, you want to see what levels are at, Leah Galton. But I remember out of the corner of my eye, I could see Christy Pierce turn up to the testing session. And at this point, I've started the warm-up. And then I see Christy starting to jog a little bit. She puts her cleats on, and I'm like, okay, what's she doing here? And then we start the sprint testing, and I see Christy again out the corner of my eye. She's kind of doing a couple of build-up sprints, and so then we get through the players, and I didn't have Christy down on the list to test, and then she comes up, and I'm like, okay, so you're testing? And she's like, yeah, why not? And so she ran the 30-meter sprint, and basically she was the fastest in that group, which, you know, it's not a slant on any single player there, because her speed was comparable to male players. It was more credit to her that, you know, even at this age now, she was, you know, 40 at the World Cup in 2015, so she's soon to be 42, that she's still physically, I mean, in the nicest possible way, I call her a freak physically, because she just has immense genes and just incredible physical qualities. So, you know, I really think her experience at the back for Sky Blue is immense, and those players around her, you know, Mandy Freeman coming in, a rookie first year, is going to learn so much from Christy Pierce if she listens to her. So, you know, that buy-in from the players was immense, so that other players then bought into it, and also that, you know, those older group, the senior group of players then almost kind of monitored and marshalled the other players and said, look, you know, this is what we're doing, you need to follow, you need to do it. So that was massive, other than obviously the head coach's buy-in.
That is incredible. Christy Pierce, fitter than 22, 23-year-old. It's just, it doesn't even bear thinking about, but you're right. I think it's a term that a lot of people use, and as you say, it's in no way a negative, but she is a freak, or she's a, you know, physically freakish in terms of what she's able to do on the soccer field, even at the age of 41, and you know, let's hope she carries on for a little bit longer. But give me a bit of insight into the World Cup. You mentioned it there, obviously put to bed the 99ers will forever be remembered for what they achieved, but that kind of team was almost hanging over every single team that performed in a World Cup after that. How is it different for someone in your position going into a World Cup where the games are coming a little bit more regularly? It's only ever a few days between a match, and you've only got that recovery time, maybe 2 days, 3 days max in between matches, compared to what you're more used to, where you might play, for example, upcoming, you've got Sweden and Norway, which is a few days apart, but then that's it. You know, in a World Cup, you've got your three group games, you've got, what, three or four games after that, last 16 quarterfinals, semifinals and a final, potentially seven games in the space of 3-4 weeks. How different is it in a major tournament, and what preparations are you having to do?
Yeah, I mean, for kind of 2015 especially, I'd say a massive part of our success kind of that summer was the preparation that we did in the January of that year, where we had a, you know, a 3 or 4 week really, really intensive training camp in LA again. You know, just kind of some of the attention to detail of the whole support of the team from, you know, we did some kind of specialised like screening, and then, you know, working with the trainers, the medical team gave players individual kind of pre-op plans, you know, kind of stretches that they should be doing pre-session. When we did a gym session, we'd split them off into their groups based on that, and they'd spend 15, 20 minutes with kind of our trainers and medical staff working on some of those areas. You know, we did some really specialised testing, and then from that, you prescribed individual intervals for players based off kind of, we call it their maximal aerobic speed. The intensity of the camp, you know, we had some good lifting sessions in there, and really that was pushing players to lift heavier in a safer environment where we could control it and supervise them. The training on field was intense. We had to seek out good turf because obviously the tournament that summer was obviously going to be turf. So, you know, our general manager did so much work behind the scenes to find good turf in LA. And then the next level was making sure the turf was watered, and even some of that was trying to get information from FIFA, like what extent would there be water in the fields in Canada, because obviously it makes such a big difference in terms of how quickly the ball plays. So, you know, our GM had some stressful moments in those 6-7 months in the lead up to the World Cup, but, you know, everybody had an input. It was meeting as a staff, the medical, the GM, the technical coaches, myself. Okay, what can we do for each individual player? What can we do generally in camp? Making sure recovery-wise, we kind of really fine-tuned our post-match recovery. What would it look like, you know, as players left the field? They'd get a certain kind of recovery drink. They'd get to the locker room, you know, ice tubs, then get their compression pants on. They'd get their second drink. They're doing their media. They're on the bus. Then back at the hotel, we're kind of having dinner. So it's just kind of really fine-tuning all of that so that we were getting players bouncing back as soon as we could. The recovery days was difficult because you didn't have many. The other element you throw in is the amount of travel. I can't remember the exact figure, but I think we travelled something like 6,000 miles across those seven games in the World Cup. So then the other element was, okay, how can we make that travel as smooth and as comfortable and as effective as possible? So we basically kind of secured a budget to buy every single player a pillow so that they'd be used to sleeping with that pillow in the hotel. And then also they'd take that on the flight. So, you know, we travelled from Winnipeg to Vancouver, yeah. And then we had to do another travel back out to, I can't remember where we went, Montreal. So we had three, because then obviously once we'd won the semi-final, we had to go back to Vancouver. So we pretty much had three journeys where we flew right across the whole of Canada. So it was, you know, 5 or 6 hour flights. So simple things like that. And, you know, our medical team would make sure we'd have the recovery inflatable legs on the flight so players could literally get on. They'd have a whole row to themselves. They'd have the pillow. They'd have the recovery legs on. We'd give them their recovery drinks. I'd take snacks on. Again, worked with kind of GM and the support team from US Soccer to make sure the meal, the nutrition was set on the flight to make it good choices that we want the players having. So it's just kind of like trying to make sure every single thing was kind of checked. And, you know, the other piece was, you know, you look at Kelly O'Hara and she didn't play very much, if at all, in the first few games, yet, you know, then obviously came in and kind of had a big impact in the semi-final and also the quarter-final. And it was a case of the early part, you wanted to make sure she was ticking over and keeping her fresh in case you needed her later in the game, because, you know, chances are your players who aren't playing earlier on are going to be your most important players later in the tournament. So again, even the training we would do, you know, after a game for those players was so important to make sure that they were ready if they were going to be called on later in the tournament. Then it was a case of monitoring your starting players. You know, we had a lot of, you know, the back line pretty much played, you know, every minute. And so it was monitoring, okay, what were their loads in games and what do we need to do with them the day after and 2 days after a game. And at times we would monitor the GPS, the heart rate live in training sessions and pull out some of those players if we felt they'd hit a level that was kind of sufficient without going over, you know, too much ahead of the next game. The other piece that, you know, we won the semi-final and then we were headed back to Vancouver and I checked the temperature and the temperature in Vancouver, like we'd been lucky in some ways because the temperatures, we'd either played later in the evening or the temperatures hadn't been really that challenging in Canada. But then the temperature of the final was supposed to be a lot warmer than what we've been used to. So as soon as we got to, basically on the flight over, I spoke to Jill, and as soon as we got to Vancouver, I did a quick, you know, presentation to the players of, you know, amazing, well done. But, you know, this is now your opportunity. Don't let anything stop you from being as prepared as you can be for the final. And luckily we had a sauna in the hotel in Vancouver. So for the two or three days we had ahead of the final, basically said to the players, you know, it's not going to totally acclimatise you, but it's better than not doing anything at all. So I just said, if you go in the sauna for, you know, 20, 30 minutes each for these 3 days, make sure you're drinking as well. It's just going to help to push on that process a little bit. And literally, you know, I can still remember it to this day, we'd get off the bus and Abby would be like, okay, I'm going to the sauna, who's coming? And I would head down there just to check they were all okay, and you'd see like 8 or 10 of them crammed in the sauna, and then they'd get out and the next 10 would go in. And for me, it was a collective of every single player in that squad was pulling together, whether they were, you know, getting minutes on the field or whether they were not. And it was just such a collective effort. Obviously amazing to win the tournament. But for me, just the commitment and professionalism of the players, not just in those days in Canada, but like the preparation in that whole year, you know, in January in times, we did push them so hard. And, you know, I remember some of the players not breaking down, but they were like, oh my God, they're trying to break us. But it was, you just wanted to push them physically so that they were over-prepared for anything they might face throughout the games or the tournament.
So what I've learned from all that, Dawn, is that you just wing it. You don't really prepare at all, do you? It's just like you wake up every morning and just kind of give them what comes into your head. But I mean, it's an incredible...
I think they always dread what I'm going to come up with next. So when I say I'm at a conference, I'm sure they're thinking, oh no, what's she going to come back with now?
And of course, we're speaking to you at the moment. You are at a conference in Denver, and I know that with the camp coming up, I'm sure the players will be learning some new things from you. But, I mean, you've been... I'll round it off. You've been part of a squad that's won the World Cup. You've been part of a squad that won an Olympic gold medal in 2012. What's the motivation for you? You know, we're always talking to players about their motivations when they've won pretty much everything that they can. And for them, it's that continued desire to win. When you get that winning mentality, you never want to lose it. But when you're someone off the field, you can't influence what goes on for those 90 minutes. But what's the motivation for you moving forward in your role with the US team?
I mean, obviously the big one, 2015 to 2016, was to try and do that back-to-back World Cup and Olympics. So, you know, that was obviously heartbreaking, and it's, you know, it's still, it's funny, a conference I was at 2 weeks ago was delivered by the US Olympic Committee, and their opening thing was a video highlights of the Olympics, and it just brings it back all again. So, you know, obviously that was heartbreaking. For me, it's, I kind of feel like it's a new challenge in itself anyway, because those older, the more senior players, a lot of them have gone and retired, really. It's only, you know, Carly Lloyd, Becky Sauerbrunn, you know, Krieger in and out, who Rapinoe, who are kind of still around from the 2011 group. Other than that, you've really got a young, new kind of breed of players. So that motivates me with the seniors. The other piece is, like, I find the league, supporting the league from a sports science perspective, so kind of enjoyable, rewarding, frustrating at times, because still I feel like some clubs just need to get better staffing and better resources, and then if we can work with kind of more qualified people, then we can really help to grow things in the league. So it's kind of a combination of the younger players coming into the senior team and working with those players. You know, Rose Lavelle, it's been great working with her, you know, not just the last 6 months of, you know, Jill targeted her like over 12 months ago and got me to reach out to her, and I've worked with her since then. So it was great when she came in January and completed her first camp with us kind of injury free, and that she's doing so well in the league. So for me, it's a new breed of player, you know, a newer group. So it's new kind of education, as well as obviously some of those kind of senior players who are still here. And then just really working across the league and just trying to push and grow our league. It's exciting, you know, that we're still surviving in the league, and kind of attendances and games are so entertaining. I feel like there's not one team at the minute who has kind of stuck out in terms of pulling away from the rest. And some of those games are so exciting to watch. So, you know, it's kind of a combination of both of those, and still wanting to learn and grow myself. You know, the fact I've been to these conferences the last month, I still want to learn new things, know what is the up-and-coming kind of sports science, what can be applied in the field. So it's a combination of all those factors, really.
Brilliant. Well, as I said, fantastic insight, Dawn. I think, you know, achieved a lot in the 7 years that you've been with the US Women's National Team, and I'm sure that there will be more to come. As long as it's not at the expense of England, you can achieve whatever you like, whatever you like. Just remember where your roots are from. Just remember where your roots are from.
Thank you so much. And yeah, I mean, I know I have achieved things here, but obviously as well, you know, working with those England players for the 9 years was my bed, and kind of growing as a sports scientist in terms of trying things there. So, yeah, I mean, obviously I worked with, you know, Kelly Smith, Faye White, Rachel Brown, Karen Carney, you know, all of those players. And for me, you know, they're the ones who, you know, kind of helped me to learn and grow and then be able to apply some of those principles here as well. So, yeah, I mean, obviously credit to kind of those guys and those experiences as well. You know, working with Hope and her team was immense as well, and a massive part of my journey.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Well, look, as I said, great to chat, great insight, phenomenal achievements that you've had along the way. Thank you very much for joining us.
Okay, no worries. Thank you at all for asking me.